This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Hey, everybody, you've reached episode 339 of Independent Comic Book Noise, the totally independent comic book podcast from those guys who bring you Marvel Noise. I'm Steve Raker.
Phil.
Kevin.
And Andrew.
I think I read the wrong comics.
Uh-oh. As long as it wasn't from the big two, sometimes we tolerate some of their other imprints and side sort of things. But otherwise, it's nothing but indie comics here. The language can get a little colorful depending on the material, so listeners beware.
Yeah, Andrew.
So what you been reading this week?
Well, me and Andrew both read something called Monster and Madman, The Secret History of Frankenstein and Jack the Ripper. Let me ask you first, Steve. That first Steve Niles Frankenstein series, is that over yet?
No, not at all.
Okay, I was curious if this was a sequel, but I guess not. But it's Steve Niles again writing it with Damian Worm as the artist and Chris Ryle as the editor. Basically, it takes place after... The reason why I thought it was a sequel because it basically takes place after the first Dr. Frankenstein story. And it's him wandering through the Arctic, I guess.
Okay.
And just like meeting up with the boat crew and kind of traveling around till he eventually gets to Britain. And then the last page, you finally see Jack the Ripper, but that's about all you get for the first issue.
So it's a buddy story.
Well, the interesting thing, I don't think Andrew read issue two.
No, I just have issue one.
Yeah, but they get more into the Jack the Ripper part and... basically starts talking how he wants to build him a companion. That's why he's going out and killing girls and taking their parts and stuff.
Whoa. I take it this is from IDW?
Yeah. So that makes me think... that's why if the other one was the first part, I thought maybe the third miniseries would be the Lady Frankenstein or whatever her name is. Frankenwoman. What was she called in the movies?
Bride of Frankenstein. Yeah.
Bride of Frankenstein, that's it. I thought that would be it.
There's no groom of Frankenstein or anything?
Nope. What did you think of it, Andrew?
The artwork is almost looks like, I would say, maybe like old-timey photographs manipulated into sort of a woodcut style with some color. If that makes sense to you. So it's very unique looking. Like the cover image adequately portrays the inside art. But I thought some of the storytelling, I don't know if it was intentionally vague or that's just the way I missed it. But on the ship, I think it's supposed to take place. Basically, the book ends, you know, they're in the Arctic and the Dr. Frankenstein dies and the monster, you know, in this story doesn't like, and so he's a little sort of a little emo-ish a little bit in the beginning, but then he sort of toughens up, and when he gets on the boat he's hired to do a hit job. And part of the problem was, Phil, do you think he killed the guy he was supposed to, or do you think he didn't? That's what I couldn't figure out.
I thought he did.
Okay, I couldn't, because he like He's sent to go kill this guy who welched on some debts, and he breaks in and he asks the guy.
Oh
yes.
No, that's right. No, he didn't. That's right. He because he saw the kids there or something, I believe. Right.
Yeah, and so I couldn't tell if he killed the guy or not, and I didn't know. Like maybe it's intentionally meant to be vague, and you're supposed to read it how you want or whatever. So that part was there were some of the that's that kind of sparse. Well,
no, because he ended up throwing the money, all the money he got, I guess, for the hired kill, and then he walks out the door.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know if he left that for the kids. You know what I mean? Like, he still killed the dude and left the money for the kids, or if he left for the dude. But I guess you're right. I mean,
yeah, because you can see the dude and the kid smiling afterwards.
Oh, see, I thought that was the kid.
No, because there's only one kid and then the guy.
Oh, I see, because to me they look like two kids. Because in those other photos, he's got the big jug ears, and he doesn't have those in the first picture. Mm. Well, anyways, so for me, some of the storytelling was a little, I was kind of puzzling over.
You get that with this kind of art, I think, though. Sometimes it could be a little confusing because it's not as clear as superhero books, maybe.
Right. But it's very mood. It conveys the mood correctly.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm always like, wait, was this meant to be ambiguous? Am I reading this correctly? So as a result, I think this is probably something that's going to be better as a whole collection.
Because when
you read the first issue, it's pretty, you know, I felt like I didn't get too far after the first one.
Their art in the second issue is awesome. And it's a little different than the first one. It's way more polished and more detail and stuff.
Okay.
I think you'll like it a lot more. Like just looking at the alleyways of London it's well done.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't dislike it. It didn't really hook me, the first one.
Yeah, like it's almost like it's a whole new artist in the second issue. So maybe he did that on purpose as a...
For the different chapters, like a different feel. That could be. Well, interesting. Well, like I said, IDW seems to have hit. I really enjoyed, I think, like we all did, the Bernie Wrightson and Steve Niles collaboration.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful, that one.
That just takes time because Bernie's obviously putting a lot of heart and soul and beautiful work on the page. So it's worth taking the time.
Niles says the original art is huge for that too, and that they're going to be making a big oversized volume of it when they're done. Wow.
Definitely get that. Yeah. And this series is a 3-issue miniseries, so there's one more issue to come out.
Oh, that is good to know, because we're looking at the cover, it doesn't... I mean, I picked this up because you had mentioned it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't
You don't see that as much on miniseries these days. I think they do that on purpose, maybe in case it's popular enough so they can keep it open sometimes.
Okay. That completely makes sense. But on the other hand, if I had known it was 3 issues, I probably would have just picked up the second one anyways. In for a penny, in for a pound. I mean, a 3-issue limited series is not, you know, if you're going to get one, I'll often get the other two, but good to know.
And I'm okay with Steve Niles writing Frankenstein comics for a while. I think he's doing a good job so far.
Yeah, I mean, he knows too. I think he makes him just dark enough. I think some of the Frankenstein monster, sometimes they make him too innocent in a sense.
Yeah.
Where I liked it. I mean, he's not evil, but...
Well, this one
he's
found...
He's got a temper. He's got a little anger. He does what needs to get done.
Yeah. I did find this one kind of innocent, though. Like...
But he still goes out and kills when he has to.
Well, you haven't seen him kill yet.
He's accused of killing the one guy on the ship. Did he not do that? That's how he gets the leverage to hire.
Yeah, that was about it, though. But it's not like for me, Frankenstein's a good guy.
He is. But I meant that sometimes I think they have him portrayed almost like a little child in a way.
I see what you mean. Yeah,
like he is
like Monster.
You don't want to mess with him. Like he is still more cognizant and has a bit of like,
yeah,
you know, he'll do what needs to get done. He's not just the.
This is the Frankenstein that would bang the bride of Frankenstein, is what you're saying.
Yeah, but he'd also, if you mess with him, he'd rip your arms off.
Yeah,
I mean, he wouldn't rip your arms off if you left him alone.
Yes. Kevin, what you been reading?
Been reading a little bit of Undertow, Image Comics series that I think it's 6-issue miniseries. But, you know, it just says the number one on the cover. And then I'm like, well, is this an ongoing or
I'm seeing that a lot, like on a lot of comics. Yeah.
And remember when Marvel did that? Because you're like, oh, is this book going to get canceled soon? So we're not going to really tell you, like, I guess I can understand, but I can't approve 100%. Because if I'm going in for 6 issues or if I'm going in for an ongoing, I'm like, oh, I might have the cash for one and not for the other. But then I guess if you're really successful, then you're like, well, we want to keep going.
Yeah, they do tell you in previews, but not everyone reads that, though. But
yeah, well, that's what I noticed for this. Like, I guess it was with the 3rd issue in previews I noticed that it was a 6-issue, and then I'm like, I'm sure on the first one I had no idea. Because then if you're pre-ordering and you're like, oh, should I just add this to the pull list? Or should I order these one at a time? Even if you're just ordering them, like, you kind of want to know.
We should probably give a quick, it's Steve Orlando's the writer. Artyom Trakhanov is the artist. Letterer, designer Thomas Maurer. I have the Simon Roy cover, which is the B cover.
I'm not sure which one is which. Is this the... I guess that's like not the one with the hand coming out of the water. That's probably the other one, right?
No, that's the other one.
Okay.
And that cover, is that the one you have, Kevin?
Yeah. It has the bright pink on the, like, for the surface world, and then the underwater is like the blues and the greens.
Yes, and that's the interior artist. I like Roy, that's why. I mean, if they're the same price and I see a couple covers next to each other, you know what I mean? I'll grab the one I like. It was, at least for me, it was the same price. I don't know if in other stores or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't often pay for variants, but if it's the same and I like one guy, I'll get the other cover. So that's the one I picked up.
And what's weird is, like, the back cover has drawing on it too, but it doesn't, like, really match. It's like a separate image. It's just like the underwater, and then it shows, like, the... Like, you just get to, like, the surface of the water right at the top of the page, and then that's orange. So I'm like, well, that's kind of interesting, I guess.
I think they wanted the same, because there's two different covers. I have the same back cover, so I think they wanted a generic back cover that would go with either front cover.
I guess so. It's just, you're kind of looking at it, and you're like, well, it, like, the rock sort of links up with the surface water on the front cover, but then nothing else really... like matches. I don't know, but I knew that there must be a story, like someone's gonna write a story like this about some Atlanteans and like them being like the major force in the world and everything, because I've rolled this idea around in my head before, you know, there's so much water, and like, yeah, you deal with the people on land, and usually in all these superhero stories or whatever, and I'm like, but there's like a whole other world under there that looks like another, like an alien planet or something. And I'm like, how many stories are there? Like, I start thinking back to like that image graphic novel Aqualung that was supposed to be the beginning of a story, and they sort of deal with some of that. You know, you start playing with the whole Aquaman, Submariner type of thing. So I knew there was some potential.
For the listener at home, Undertow basically is set in prehistoric times where man is a bunch of savages running on the plains, hunting and gathering, and Atlantis is a fully developed civilization under the water, and it flips the paradigm the Atlanteans to be above ground. They have to have water suits like we have air suits underneath. And so there's a particularly bold individual who's living in a spaceship, which is a dangerous environment because obviously, you know, if they're in the air, they will die without being underwater. So it just flips that traditional kind of, as Kevin was saying, you know, you have a water suit instead of an air suit and that type of thing.
Doesn't it remind you, I don't know if I think Steve's read this, but like that early Inhumans history, like where you had the Kree coming to Earth and like messing with like the human civilization and everything, and like you only have like cavemen and everything, but there's like the Inhumans were there, and like Celestials show up, and it's like all that. It seems like that type of time, like that. I guess some of that Jack Kirby crazy feel where there's just like, what's going on here? It's like anything can be going on, and like all their culture and tools and everything are like really foreign and developed. Like a lot of world building is going on.
Yes, but I think it's they picked a particular point. I don't know, maybe like a 1900s-ish feel if it was humans, where like society has been around and there's conflict within it, and he's sort of like almost a character out of Jules Verne, I would say, would be a good example, because he has these kind of fantastical devices. And he's an explorer and an adventurer all in one. And so that part was neat, having a developed civilization. And I thought the art had a Jeff Lemire or I think I might have made this joke before, but because it's underwater, it has a Lemurian feel.
Lemurian. There we go.
But did you get that vibe from the artwork, Kevin? Or
I never thought of that for some reason. I don't know. I guess.
But the one thing I did not, and why I had to list the old Thomas Maurer in here, is I really don't like the white caption box letters that he uses for the first few pages. I found them pretty tough to read. Like, later on they switch to black, but in the underwater world it's white, and it really blends in. I mean, it's a pretty trivial matter, but just anything that impairs the reading of the book.
While I like the artwork, I found it a little hard to follow at times, which is good that they have, like, those circles that sort of, like where some action is going on, it'll be, like, surrounded in a white circle, and then you'll see the red to focus on something. But it's still, like, not 100% clear in the underwater stuff, like, what exactly you're supposed to be seeing and who's being killed and everything.
Yeah, the opening, between the lettering and, like you say, the confusing action, it is a little bit, because clearly there are at least two sides fighting, maybe three, I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
But basically the idea is we have a privileged son who's in this conflict, and he gets recruited by this adventurer who's sort of almost mythical, and he decides to go. His name is Redum Anchargal, and he's the Jules Verne lead guy, and this guy decides to join him. And they need that because it provides a nice in, because Redum can be explaining things to the new recruit, but he's also explaining it to the reader, too. And so they go in their little wetsuits on land, and then they go up to the spaceship and things like that. The other thing that was odd is later on, there are these, like, asterisks, yellow asterisks, and they have words that, like, I guess it's like a guide. Like, it'll be like scaled weapons, and it'll have an asterisk in the back of the page, or like bioinnovation, and I couldn't quite crack that code. Kevin, did you figure out what that was? I guess what it is translations of the writing. But because it's really small in the panel, it's tough for me to read the original, but I would guess that's what it is translating, like, signs in the background into English. Is that...
Yeah, I'm thinking, like for some TV series, if you were, like, on Romulus or something, there would be, like, a thing there going, oh, this is what... Like, what the English is for those words.
Right, and I just wish, I personally wish they'd just done away and leave the weird language, like, to whatever extent we need to figure it out. Like, it didn't seem to add, like, one's a gymnasium, like, what do we really need? Like, it just was, to me, it was a bit distracting from the issue to have the, I mean, I guess some ways you look at it as added value because it's more to puzzle out, but I would have just been happy with the language, whatever this weird alien language is, just have it be that.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit, I guess I think of Prophet a little bit when it, like, went into all the stuff he was carrying, but it's just hilarious because you might not think, I guess you would, it's like you got to keep on thinking it's the reverse, because with the gymnasium, it's like, oh, they're just in a pool swimming around, but no, they're in a gymnasium, that's what they would do. But they do have some other text, like all that pink, like, lettering, and it's just, like, random symbols, and they don't really decode that.
No. That's why I didn't know what, like, why they chose to decode some, and it just was, like I said, it's not a huge distraction, it just, it's something that when I think about, it makes me think, oh, someone had to make a decision, and that sort of takes me out of the story when I'm thinking more about process stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not really a criticism, it's just when I look at stuff and I can't figure out why, it makes me sometimes think, like, well, they did this but not that, or this. And like I said, they switch from, like, white lettering to black lettering. I much prefer the black. I just, the white, it's really tough to pick out for me, unless you have a background to it.
Yeah. And I thought the other things were cool, like, later on, like, talking about the filtering the water, or how you would be growing food, and, like, people have different ideas between the, it seems, between the two cultures, like... Like if
yeah, well, clearly this guy is an innovator. Like, he's on the cutting edge, so he's not afraid of using the air, where most people, like, the air is... And that was his whole speech. He gives a speech about freedom, and freedom's not about fear. You know, it's about going on and being on these, using these dangerous things. And there's a segment where they get exposed to air for a quick minute before they go back in the water. And it's sort of like to remind you of the danger you're around. And he's certainly a charismatic. I just think for me, there were a couple of things that could have been tweaked to really push it to the next level.
But I thought it was interesting, the color choices in here. Like, they're not scared to use all the colors. So I'm like, sometimes it's like really interesting. And other times you're like, like that could have been a bit better. But I don't know. I kind of like that they went with some more experimental stuff there.
Well, you get in this world, which is presumably our world, you get to see underwater, yeah, on land, and then up in a spaceship, and then in this cave. Like, you really, it covers a lot of locales. And I believe issue 2 just came out, as in, like, yeah, maybe this sense. Week or recently. I mean, I haven't read it, but I think I just saw it on the stands.
Yeah, it certainly reminds me of, like, of good comics. Even that, like, Fraction Defenders issue where they went into, like, Atlantean royalty and stuff like that. So cool stuff. I knew it would be out there, and someone did it.
I haven't read it, but I enjoyed the art a lot. I think it'll make a pretty trade.
You guys are giving me some good ideas of things to read. I haven't really read that much comics since we last gathered, but what I have been doing is just, like, looking through a lot of, like, comics history stuff. I got a oversized hardcover, but the digital version of The Sincerest Form of Parody, which was a collection of a whole bunch of the Mad Wannabe takeoff magazines that popped up in the 50s that all crashed and burned. The features were all really dated, but I was just more interested in looking at the art of the day and the text pieces that went along with you know, like about Ross Andrew and Mike Esposito's Get Lost magazine that lasted just a few issues and things like that. But there were a few notable artists that popped up, and it was worth just flipping through. But, you know, you don't need to read another parody of Archie, you know. But the crowded panels and, you know, a lot of EC artists and stuff like that. It was somewhat interesting. But what I also have been doing is trying to catch up some on my backlog of magazines from Tomorrow's. I don't know if you guys dip into those very often, but I really like a lot of the offerings that they have, their regular magazines.
I'm not familiar with Tomorrow's. Can you explain it to me?
Tomorrow's is TWO Morrow's, because it's two brothers, the Morrow's brothers. And they took over publishing some fanzines and reviving them or rejuvenating them. One was the Jack Kirby Collector. And the other was Alter Ego, which was Roy Thomas's edited, you know, fanzine. Okay. And kind of from there, they branched out, and they've put out a lot of different one-shot type publications. But their regular magazines are like Mike Manley's Draw magazine, that's very art-oriented. Recently, I just read they had an all Joe Jusko issue where he's all talking about process and stuff, and that was really enjoyable. I had the pleasure of meeting Joe Jusko last year right here in Albany, twice actually, in the same year, and he was an awfully cool dude. Also Back Issue Magazine, and that covers comics history from the 70s and the 80s. Mm-hmm. So it's right in my and Andrew's wheelhouse, especially. They do a lot of stuff from the Big Two, but also alternate stuff. They've done First Comics and Sable and all that sort of good stuff. Alter Ego also just had a big Herb Trimpe issue that was really good, and they just had a big Denny O'Neill issue too, and that magazine is really interview heavy. Okay. But the one that I've really been reading is a new one, but it's based on an old one that they had for a while, Comic Book Artist from editor John B. Cook, and it ran, I want to say maybe 30 issues or so. I'm just pulling that number out of a hat. Hat is the nice way to say where I'm pulling it from. But now he's come out with a new magazine called Comic Book Creator, and it's on its fourth issue now. And I think it comes out quarterly like a lot of the other magazines that they have. And the first issue was Kirby focused. The second issue was Joe Kubert tribute issue with his passing last year or the year before. And the third issue was all Neil Adams. And the fourth issue, which just came out, that I just finished through, was Russ Heath. And even though there's all big features and galleries and stuff and tributes to those main artists, throughout these issues also, there's Kurt Busiek interviews. There was a big feature on Frank Robbins, on Todd McFarlane, two issues of Mark Waid interviews, an awesome Denny's Cohen feature that had his White Velvet ad from the 80s. I had no idea he's in a white suit and everything. It's hilarious. But these are great. There's also new Hembeck Dateline strips in there. You can buy, I don't know, they're giant magazines. They must be almost $10 if you buy the print copy. Again, I'm just guessing because I buy the digital versions. Digital versions, $4.
Print is $21.95.
No
number,
way.
Number six is called Swamp Men, and it looks really cool.
Comic book artist?
Yeah.
I mean, comic book creators?
Yeah, comic book creator. They have they have the covers they up are to huge. Number eight. Yeah.
They're huge magazines. The digital version's $4.
Wow.
And you also get, whether you buy the magazine or the digital version, you also get an extra PDF of all stuff that's digital only. That's extra interviews and extra art and all that stuff. And for that matter, a lot of their magazines are available digitally, mm-hmm. and they have extra color pages that the magazines had in black and white because they were cutting corners and stuff. And if you subscribe to any of the magazines digitally, you get like another buck off an issue.
Yeah. Well, if you subscribe to the print, they sell for $18 about. So you do get a deal that way too.
Yeah, digitally now I'm subscribing to the Jack Kirby Collector and this comic book artist and back issue. I think I'm getting a really good deal on what I was really spending a lot of money on the print versions on previously. Mm-hmm. And they're nice and colorful and sharp and good stuff and all the extras that you get. I love Tomorrow's Publishing.
Oh, sorry. That price was actually just for issue 6 because I guess it's a special issue.
Okay.
All the other ones are actually $9.
Yeah, I was going to say they must be around $10 yeah, like the Kirby Collector.
But for some reason, that Swamp one, it's 192 pages and it's 20.
And that shouldn't go with just the passing mention either. Jack Kirby Collector, great as ever, getting lots of original art, lots of interviews about Kirby, old interviews with Kirby, get Mark Avenir answering Jack questions, and you get text pieces and all kinds of stuff on Jack, and they manage to keep pumping out interesting stuff issue after issue, quarter after quarter. It's on the top of my stack every time it's out.
Mm-hmm.
Check out Tomorrow's. You get a lot. They have free versions of a lot of their magazines you can get digitally online, too. If you're new to them, you can check out at least one issue of every one of their magazines for free through tomorrows.com. Again, T-W-O, Morrows. Definitely worth grabbing the free PDFs. I got a comic book in the mail yesterday from Andrew. I got the auteur signed by the auteur.
Oh, no way. Yes.
Thanks, Andrew.
Well, I saw him at Emerald City Comic Con.
You sent me Super Pro.
NFL Super Pro?
Yeah. What an asshole.
Hey, I sent you two comics.
I know. I was saving that one for the show, though.
I only sent one to Steve, but... I went and visited the Emerald City Comic Con up in Seattle recently. It's my first time in Seattle and first time at that convention. So I decided I would try out and get all kinds of different stuff. And one place I went to was to see the Evil Twin Comics guys, Fred Van Lente and Ryan Dunleavy.
Those are good guys.
You may know them from their previous efforts with Action Philosophers. And comic book comics, or comic book history of comics, depending on if you have the issues or the collected edition. And their most recent foray into comics is Action Presidents. And I got the special Dead Cherry Tree edition, Action Presidents Washington. Because I believe, I think this is mostly Comixology, but they do have some print editions, and I was able to snag some because I prefer print to digital, as faithful listeners know. And basically, this is their treatment of George Washington. And if you're familiar with the team, and if you're not, you should get yourself familiar. Either pick philosophy, comic books, or presidents, whichever topic interests you the most. It's the same treatment. So you're going to find...
But could someone like me who doesn't like politics and crap like that, though?
Like if you like, their style, what they do is there's usually a fair amount of visual gags that Ryan puts in that sort of counterpoint. That they tell the story that's going on, but they also add a little bit of color and humor to the text box and dialogue that's added to it.
I just don't understand how someone can make like George Washington interesting to me.
Well, a lot of those guys did a lot of crazy stuff, and Washington is not limited to, you know, the contradictions of the old, you know, a bunch of slave owners that wanted freedom, and some of the fact that I had actually read some biographies of Washington when I was much younger. So the fact that he sort of had a lot of contempt for his own army is played up to some humorous effect. You know, he was a professional army man, and a lot of the early revolutionary soldiers were not. So that created a certain amount of tension. Mm-hmm. And I really like Ryan's artwork. As I've done in the past, I picked up a page of Comic Book Comics, the Does Crime Pay page, which is a parody of the Crime Does Not Pay strip that was so famous. And so I'm, like I said, if you're on board with this team and you like sort of, I think they combine enough information and enough humor that it really pays off. Washington, for me, just because I'd read a couple biographies, it was a little less learning than some of the other ones. Like, I didn't know that much about the philosophers. So
which one should I read, since I'm not really into any of the subjects?
I would say comic book comics, because you like comics.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
And they have the collected edition. The
stuff alone, you'll crack up, be cracking up.
Yeah, the collected edition is from IDW.
Okay.
And they are coming out with a new Action Philosophers hardcover.
Well, I've seen them at
new content is coming out this summer.
Yeah, they've been at Fan Expo. Mm-hmm.
And Andrew always fails to mention that they're all college buddies of Andrew's. So
that's insane.
Really?
Yeah, we used to all make comics together. In fact, Ryan and I collaborated in college.
So you're like the one they kicked out of the band?
Pretty much. They're the successful ones, and I'm the other one. I usually fail to mention because what was their low point is my high point. So
I
still have those comics, so I've got my blackmail material ready to bring them down should they get to.
That must be fun seeing them at conventions and stuff then.
Oh, it's Steve Ellis is another one I went to school with. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun seeing those guys. And it's just really heartwarming to have gone to college.
Yeah, it's cool.
With a bunch of people who wanted to do something and then really fought through and made it happen. Because I went to school with a lot of people who had ideas of what they were going to do and then ended up, life took them other places. Mm-hmm. So I really love when I find, I went to school with a broadcaster too, Soren Petro, who's in Kansas City. And when I was a kid, all he wanted to do at school was be a broadcaster in Kansas City. And I heard him on the radio a few years ago broadcasting something about the Chiefs. And it was just really heartwarming to see that, like, he made his dream come true. And I emailed him and he talked about, it was a long road and, you know, sports radio is a tough business and everything, but he made it happen.
And so it was just one of New York walking around with you when we crossed Dunleavy and Van Lente's table there. They were right out from the table and hanging out with you. And I dropped your name the last time I saw Steve Niles when he was here locally in Albany, New York, and made him stop sketching and give me eye contact and give me a few friendly minutes. So it's good to know the rabbit.
Yeah. It's the LA lifestyle, I guess. All his big parties.
He's the most sociable out of everyone, I think.
But I would suggest...
Hey, banging girls is called sociable.
I would suggest running down Ryan at a convention because his art pages are ridiculously affordable compared to a lot of people. Like the price.
That awesome Mini-Mates print, too, that I bought from him that had like all the Marvel Mini-Mate like guys versus DC Mini-Mates, and they were like torturing each other and stuff. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, I bought one of his art books, but I don't think he had any pages when he was here.
Yeah, well, like I said, find out if he does and pick him up. You're not going to find a better value. And those comic book comic stuff, all those pages are great.
Well, if they're at Fan Expo this year, I'll definitely pick up their stuff then. Try it out.
Anything else from ECC, CCCC, Andrew?
Well, I also picked up a special limited edition Emerald City Comic Con exclusive cover of The Field and got it signed by Mr. Brisson and Mr. Roy. Mm. And I think that was a book Phil wanted to talk about.
Yeah, that was one I was excited for. And when I heard you mention Simon Roy's name earlier, I guess, and you said you were a big fan, then I understood why you picked it up.
Brandon Graham was also there. They were all in a corner, the three of them.
Mm-hmm.
The profit trade and got them. It was fun. Just, you know, you could pass the stuff and they would all sign.
Yeah.
In the little corner there. But anyways, The Field.
The Field is definitely up my alley, I think. It's kind of a mystery story. Basically, it's this guy. He's just in a field, just in his underwear. Kind of, I guess, wakes up, not sure what's going on, and he finds a phone from an unknown caller. But it's an iPhone or one of the smartphones, and you need a passcode to get in, so he can't get in. So he can only receive texts, and it says run. So right there, it kind of grabbed me. Just the, I don't know, it's kind of intense because you know something's coming for him now, and here he is in this field with nothing, pretty much, but some mystery character trying to help him. And the next text he gets is kind of creepy. It says, do not get in the car, basically, and he does. And it kind of goes to shit from there.
Yeah, because he's sort of at a loss. Mm-hmm. It seems like the other people are able to manipulate him.
Yeah, because he doesn't know who to trust or who or what's going on. Like he's still in probably a bit of shock just from waking up in the field kind of thing.
Yeah, because they make it clear that, you know, when the guy picks him up, that's when you get sort of he doesn't remember anything.
Yep.
And he just is there sort of following along. But he can, you know, speak and everything. And just remembering details about his life. It's not like he doesn't know who he is. But he's picked up by, I got to say, the most unique Bible salesman I've ever
had. Yeah, he's a complete psychopath, pretty much yelling at him for no reason and hitting him. And
but he also gives him clothes, so he's not
in his underwear. You can kind of get why he shouldn't have gotten in the car.
He you know, offers to buy him dinner. That's not nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, he's perhaps homicidal, but there's also another group that's chasing him. So there's some, we don't know if they're connected or not connected. Like it's a big mystery at this point.
But when they get to the diner, that's where it gets really interesting.
Yes, that's when the stakes are raised, as they say.
Yeah.
But, where is this guy going? What's he doing? I'm guessing this is probably a limited series.
I think it was 5, if I remember correctly.
So you'll get a text telling you how many issues it is sometime soon.
But
I'm gonna check this out. Sounds good.
I loved it. I'm definitely 100% on board. This is it's like Morning Glories. I really enjoy that for the mysteries in it and stuff, and or Lost, that type of show.
I know I've said in the past that I'm kind of a tough nut to crack as far as introducing new concepts, and not that I'm not open to them, but that there's a lot of good stuff out there that I'm already reading, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So something that can get you that quick into the peril and feeling the action and excitement of it. That's what that's what happened with Black Science.
Yeah,
they got you right into the threat, you know. So that's cool without having to worry about all the backstory, how they got there right away. All of a sudden, things are happening.
And we still had like another 6 pages to talk about of crazy stuff. So there was still a lot more to it, but we didn't want to ruin that, I think.
And who's this by? What company?
Image.
Some crazy stuff that went down in the latest Black Science, huh? Eh? And you'll say, I haven't read it.
I haven't. I'm on issue 4.
I still haven't tried it yet either, but it looks awesome, though.
I reread I think you did as well, Andrew, because that was part of the reason I read it, was your Overture is a new recoloring version of an old, at least, classic, at least comic book legend-wise, which is Walter Simonson's Star Slammers, which got a brand new spanking number one with brand new coloring from IDW, and a new Walt Simonson cover, too.
Yes, and the new colors are Len O'Grady replacing the Walter and Louise Simonson colors. And this was perfect for me because I didn't remember the original. I mean, I'm sure I read it, but, man, I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, so asking me to recall a comic from 30 years ago.
Well, I'm holding the original in my hand right now, and it's a Marvel graphic novel from 1983. And the color here is credited to Wheezy and Deborah Pedler. So, interesting, Pedler got the boot, and Walter got her credit in this new version.
Maybe that was a pen name for him.
But, you know, as I'm flipping through, the old coloring, other than an overabundance of white, because it's adapting material that wasn't made for the graphic novel size into the graphic novel, so there's too much white, especially in the backgrounds, but the coloring is not bad in the original at all. In fact, it's quite good. There's a lot of blends and whatnot, but there's definitely an upgrade to the new coloring. It looks really fantastic. I mean, there's one scene where there's just a glove, and I counted 7 different shades of, like, brown and tan in that glove. Good stuff.
When I thought, like, if you hadn't told me, this could have been a book I picked up today. I thought it aged remarkably well for something that's 30 years old, because comics seem particularly prone to having books that just fill in the year when you pick it up.
Yeah.
And here I thought, part of it is Simonson, they really kind of throw you in, and they don't over-explain a lot, which I appreciate. You just have to take it. You know, you get this, there's this elite group, the Star Slammers, and they're mercenaries. And that's all you really need to know. And then from there, it's a particular tale of them going into a situation where they were hired with on these alien worlds. And I like that there's not a lot of, well, this is this and this is that. And, you know, we can pick it up. We're smart people. It's space. Well, it's supposed to be a little weird.
This material was 10 years old when we got it in the early 80s, for the most part. This was Walt's, story goes, this was his college thesis. So he reworked this stuff to make the graphic novel with Marvel years later. And now reworking it, you know, putting a little more magic on it for today. This is about the first fifth, I want to say, of the graphic novel, the first quarter maybe, and it's my favorite scene. I mean, I do think they get a little heavy into the concept of who's who, what's what later on in this issue, but the first three quarters of this issue is my favorite part of this whole graphic novel, because it's that opening scene where they're just on a mission, they're totally badass. You aren't introduced to them, you're introduced to the force that's dug in fighting them. And, you know, they're acting like they're fighting an army, and it's just 3 armored dudes, and they're so badass, and they manage to wade their way through a very manipulative situation with flying colors and with such efficiency that they're just so cool. It's like how the Punisher is portrayed when he's that force of nature kind of a thing sometimes with, like, the Marvel Max-type books and whatnot. These guys are just, you know, they're going to find the way, and you're not going to be able to one-up them. And there's only 3 of them. Then it gets a little heavy into the story that then takes place from there, where we get to see their vulnerabilities and stuff. I almost wish we got to see more of their just kick-buttness from, like, they are in the beginning here.
I kind of enjoyed the restraint he shows, though, because he doesn't... Like, he could have made this whole first issue just combat, or really stretched it out. And I thought he tied a pretty good balance of not making it too much of the fighting. You know, part of what keeps our allure is you don't see too much of them. Sometimes when you reveal too much, it takes the mystique away.
But you have to be careful, too, that this wasn't intended to be a single issue. This is pulled, you know, this is almost arbitrary, you know, cutting point at the end of a flashback when you're flipping through the graphic novel. You know, it's just a slight scene change, but it really picks right up where the last panel ends here. So it's almost a happy accident that this gives you everything you need all in one issue.
Well, I gotta say, while I think the new coloring is nice, $3.99, they're gonna push this out. What, four issues, you figure? Like, I don't, if you could pick up the original for $5 or something, I don't know what it run, if it's a limited print or something, but a lot of those 80s books you can get pretty cheap. I don't know that you wouldn't be better pressed, you know.
The original was $5.95 back in 83.
So I'm sure you could probably find it in a lot of cheaper areas. I don't know the print run. Maybe it's tough to get, but I like
it.
The new one, but...
And John Workman did the letters. We should have mentioned that, too.
Yeah, from
Workman Simonson duo.
Yeah, they were the first. That was the first artist edition, was that Thor that I got, was him with the Workman letters. And it's really nice to see that, the old-timey hand lettering that they used to do. And now a lot of companies, they don't have it anymore. And then a related ECC anecdote that I probably should have told elsewhere. Lieber mentioned that he would have loved to do his own lettering, but Marvel forbades hand lettering now, I guess. They do their, you know, they have their deals with the lettering companies, and that's how they do lettering.
Wah, wah.
But I really, it was fun. Like I said, I think that you could give this to someone today, and they wouldn't, who doesn't like old comics, like insert me. Phil, and yep. They might enjoy it.
And I do like space stuff, so that'll draw me in, too.
Yeah, it gets big and spacey, that's for sure. Bring us home, Phil.
All right.
Just one more.
Well, first off, have you guys ever seen the movie Event Horizon?
No.
It's an awesome movie. What do you mean? No.
I remember some not-so-nice things and jokes being told about that movie from high school.
That movie is awesome.
Yeah.
Basically what it is the ship shows up after being missing for years and years, and it turns out it's traveled through hell. And they're watching video clips, and you're seeing like people just do horrible things, like out of Crossed almost, and it was an awesome movie. But anyway, that's what this comic feels like. It's by Garth Ennis and Facundo Piercio or something, and it's Avatar Press. And starts off, it's not that slow or anything. Basically, it's just a crew on a ship on a kind of like a Deep Space Nine type spaceship, kind of going around in space, kind of talking about doing their daily chores and stuff. And then all of a sudden, bam, they just, this thing, like this giant alien looking thing, just appears in part of their ship almost, like kind of like Kitty Pryde would phase through something. One little girl's like, we're losing our cargo, and they look out, and it's all people in basically frozen status, so they're all gone for good. Well, you know Garth Ennis, he's going to do some terrible things to them, of course. There's one guy trapped in the ship, and half of him's trapped in this alien object thing. He's pretty much dead, and it looks very Lovecraftian. They find an alien body, this giant body in this kind of tube thing, and it just crumbles to dust almost like it's been there forever. And but yeah, that's about it. But it's like I say, it's pretty fast paced, and if you like space stuff, I think it's really worth checking out.
Is that ongoing or limited, or
not sure, but I think it'd be limited.
And it shares the name with the film. It's called Event Horizon, or
no, I just find it has that feel.
What's like, the name of it?
I didn't even say the name. Wow.
I don't think so.
Caliban, not Taliban.
Okay.
But yeah, definitely check it out. It's
Mr.
creepy.
Caliban.
So.
All right, Steve, could I just insert one? I know I've been chatting up a storm here, but one last quick plug, I guess, for something.
Let's hear it.
Well, want a mini. Mini comic, a true mini comic. I'd suggest turning your attention to Harry Moyer. He came out with a new one. What's interesting is the packaging. It's a mini comic, but he designed it in an interesting way. How it how the story progresses. But it's called Fell Beasts. It's like $1.75, and it's at the Store Envy. So that's harrymoyer.storeenvy.com. And Store Envy is one E in the middle, the Store and Envy part. Share. I don't know if you guys probably have ordered stuff from Store Envy, but they're a nice one. And I like Harry's art. It sold me because he's loves the Zipitone, and the opening cover has a rabbit on the front of it. So I like his artwork and his storytelling. And it's $1.75 if you want to feel like throwing some money at a real independent self-published work. And you like mini comics, this one's kind of fun, the way it's laid out.
I thought you just put a rabbit on the cover and you're there.
No, that's pretty much it, too. But I also like his artwork and everything else. But yeah, I'm a big fan of rabbit-based comics.
So the rabbit's the Fell Beast, then?
Well, I don't want to give... a mini comic, I don't want to... You know, I could give you the... You can't really discuss it.
Save the Monty Python for next time. He looks so cute and sweet there.
Spoiler alert.
He's got big teeth. Oh. That's right. Next time, we tend to get into a little Monty Python comic book talk, right?
Yes. So join us if you have. It's only available digitally.
I will be practicing my silly walk until then.
I will be keeping an eye on these flowers that may indeed be evil.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Later.
Hurry home early. Hurry on home. Hobo Mancini, he's fighting Bobby Chacon. Hurry home early. Hurry on home. Hobo Mancini, he's fighting Bobby Chacon. From Youngstown, Ohio, they Hobo Mancini, a lightweight contender, by father like son. He fought for the title with Rios in Vegas, and he put him away in round number one. So hurry home early, hurry on home. Hobo Mancini's fighting Bobby Chacon. Hurry home early, hurry on home. Hobo Mancini's fighting Bobby Chacon. Texas Arguello gave Hobo a beating. 7 weeks later, he was back in the ring. Some have the speed and the right combinations. If you can't take the punches, it don't mean a thing. So hurry home early, hurry on home. Hobo Mancini's fighting Bobby Chacon. Hurry home early, hurry on home. Hobo Mancini's fighting Bobby Chacon. When they asked him who's responsible for the death of Dooku Kim, he said, someone should have stopped the fight and told me it was him. They made hypocrite judgments after the fact, but the name of the game is the hit and hit back. So hurry home.